Hi there, everyone, and welcome back to Reaccess Holyrood. I am a Rob Wilson type.
I'm a Samuel Cook type.
And we are two people who discussed the Netflix original show, BoJack Horseman, only we've already seen it through several times, so there will be spoilers ahead. We're currently making ground on season two. So today we're going to talk about Still Broken, which is season two, episode three, and season two, episode four, which is After the Party. Sam, what did you make of Still Broken?
I was disappointed, I think. Well, I say disappointed for this kind of show. It were a bit too zany for me, a bit too like generic kind of sitcom-y. It had heart at the end, but Sarah Lynn like being a bitch and the old treasure hunt kind of thing, it just seemed a bit like played out. I've seen so many things like that. It's just by the numbers. I wasn't expecting it either from season two. I thought that were in season one, but
no, I was a bit surprised too. I think to introduce such a great character in episode two with Wanda and then completely sideline her as if they'd not introduced her, this felt like an episode that could have come at any point in the season, and I think they just put it there.
Yeah, I mean, the best bit, I think, around the entire episode is Toad Chavez, because I'm not a Todd fan at all, but him like changing and having his Urkel moment was like the funniest bit of the whole episode for me. It was just, everything just seemed a bit, you know, basic.
Sometimes when Todd's storylines go like this, I often imagine what Aaron Paul must think when they give him the script, because BoJack, as much as I wasn't, I have to say I'm kind of with you in this one, I was a little bit disappointed by this episode. I still liked it, and there was still lots about it that I enjoyed, but at this stage in the show, I thought we were above this kind of stuff, where it delivers a great concept in the first 5 minutes. You know, the horse and around crew are getting back together, Herb Kazaz is dead. Like, the way that season one ended and the way that the show ends up, you kind of, I remember this episode being a lot more sad and contemplative and giving us time to think about the impact that Herb had on BoJack's life. And we get that at the end, but only at the end and only for a very short time. The stuff in the middle, the treasure hunt, the way that they use the characters from Horsing Around, it all felt a bit like wasted potential, essentially. Like, you get told at the start of the episode, oh, the Horse and Around cast get back together because Herb Kazaz has died. And you get special guest appearances from Henry Winkler, and you get a nice little analysis of Todd's character and the way he feels about himself, being kind of anxious and clumsy and a bit of a klutz, and being essentially the B-plot character, or worried that he's, like you say, like Urkel and comparisons with him. But it all felt a little, like I say, it felt a little bit like wasted potential. I think that the Todd stuff for me wasn't my favourite part of the episode. I think my favourite parts of the episode were just the scenes at the beginning and the end. You have the cold open at the funeral, and then you have the end where Herb and BoJack say that the future looks bright in that little shallow swimming pool.
Yeah, yeah.
And occasional moments where things start to feel slightly, because of the vantage point we have of being season five watchers, there are little things that feel like really sad prophecies being delivered, or just little things like Herb Kazaz kind of saying to BoJack, oh, be kind to Sarah Lynn, she didn't choose this life, and the future looks bright for Herb and BoJack, and I hope nothing changes. And yeah, there were lots of little moments in the episode where you feel quite sad. Like, when the line comes out, I mean, if you know what happens, you kind of feel it in your chest a little bit. And it's a shame that the episode wasn't stocked with moments like that, because I feel like there's definitely potential there. There's betrayal to analyse between BoJack and Bradley, his mother. Like, the fact that BoJack slept with her, and Bradley's clearly aware of this and clearly quite damaged by this, but it's a joke scenario. And the fact that Sarah Lynn is still kind of falling into a drug addiction, but again, it's a joke. And anybody who has anybody who's come into BoJack's orbit since he was on horsing around, it just feels like that he has inadvertently punished people just for knowing him. And the person who had the best life, inverted commas, should we say, was Joelle, who went off to Britain to be on the stage and came back with a pretty annoying accent.
Yeah.
And I thought that when this was being established, I remember this episode so differently to how it was. And I've seen this episode maybe two or three times.
Yeah, I'll be a bit more than that. Obviously, it's not very memorable.
No.
In the old scheme of things. But with the things that you've mentioned there, it should be, you know, it should be more memorable than it is. It just seems like that they've put them in there and they're memorable only after watching it again. But it's just, yeah, as you say, wasted potential. Charlotte pops up for a bit, and that's like one of the best bits of the episode, because obviously, like, where that goes later on, it's all like linking towards that. But I think I don't like any of the kids on Arson around. I can't stand any of them as kids, and I can't stand any of them as they're older. And
I find Joelle annoying. I find Sarah Lynn so volatile that she's hard to ignore, and because of what happens to her, and because none of it's really her fault, I think that I'm sympathetic towards her, because you're clearly just looking at a disaster. And Bradley is there. He's kind of wallpaper in this, I think.
Yeah, I mean, the only thing I can think about is how he looks like one of my best friends, which is a bit unfortunate for him, I guess. But, it's just, there's moments there that are never capitalised on here when they should be. You know, funny bits of the episode, her when he's tweeting while driving, they're quite funny, just because it keeps going on and on and on. But it's just, I want to say, beige.
Yeah, and it's, I think what bothers me most about this episode is that it's more of what I wanted out of it and what I expected out of it compared to what I got is a bit of a step down, to be honest. I've kind of gone over it, where I was expecting this to be a great chance for BoJack to properly reunite with the Horsing Around cast as adults. Like, we've had Sarah Lynn, and we've had a little glimpse into her, but I don't think we've met Bradley as an adult before at this stage.
No.
And definitely not Joelle. And I was disappointed to find that what worked really well initially in that bedroom, where they feel like a family that's been forced together again. But then the blind attorney comes in, and the blind bat attorney.
Yeah.
And that bit's fine as well, but then it's after that, because that obviously, that starts the treasure hunt. And this reminded me a little bit of an episode from season 3 that I'm not that keen on, BoJack Kills, where it's a chance for two characters to really talk to each other and really get to know each other. In the case of BoJack Kills, it's Diane and BoJack. But it's a chance for some serious analysis and some serious talking and thinking. And in the end, it just becomes a detective comedy.
Yeah.
And they do the sitcom trope, like you were saying. And it's less about what's actually there and more about what's missing from the episode that causes my issues with it, I would say.
I think it'd have been better if they'd have just, like, scrapped half of everything that was there and, like, touched more on the BoJack and Herb relationship a bit more, because
absolutely,
the bits that he's in,
the flashbacks are great.
I mean, some of the lines that Herb comes out with about there's no meaning to death and stuff, and it's just like, that's what we want. I mean, Una, if we'd have done this as we were watching it, you know, every week as it comes out, and if we'd have just watched it without already seeing it before, like, would we be more, you know, positive about this? Because
I think so, yeah. I think that it's obviously very hard to rewatch a show with so much of the context filled in, and to watch an episode like this and not just enjoy it for what it is. I think inevitably But then again, this is a show that seems to care about continuity and rewatch value, and, you know, it pays so much attention to little things that characters do and that have huge ramifications later on. We'll see this in the next episode with Diane and her not liking big surprises. Like, you know, so I don't fully forgive it for just being an early season episode. It doesn't really set any kind of pieces together. There's very little that happens that to be honest, all the stuff that happens that has future consequences is the stuff that's really strong in this episode. The stuff with Charlotte, the stuff with Herb, that doesn't take up enough of the episode for me. I think that must take up maybe 20-30% of it. Like, Charlotte has one scene, and it's probably one of the best scenes in the episode, and taps into something that the final episodes of this season really hit home at, where BoJack has essentially been mythologizing Charlotte the entire time that he's been away from her, because that's all you can do when you're not with somebody day to day. You imagine that. I mean, does it actually, to be honest, there's a great. How familiar are you with Of Montreal?
What, the band, yeah?
Yeah, yeah. They have. There's a great lyric in a song of theirs called The Past is a Grotesque Animal. I'm sure you've probably come across it.
Yeah.
Where he says, because obviously that album is a breakup album, and he says, I wonder if you're mythologizing me like I do you. And it's about the feeling that you have where you build this person up to be so special, and because you can't get in touch with them, and because you can't experience how special they are, either because you've split apart, or because you've broken up, or because you've just grown away from each other, you have this idea of them as a person, and then you meet them, and you realize that everything you thought about them was a distortion based on experiences that you're only really half remembering. And so she went to Maine for a month, and BoJack has spent 30 years thinking about it. Yeah. And she goes, oh yeah, you know, I was there for a month, but then I just moved to New Mexico. And this is reflected later on, at the end of season 2, where BoJack puts the glow sticks in the balloons and sets them free, because that's what he did with Charlotte on their prom night, right? And he wants to relive it.
Yeah.
And he wants to give somebody else that experience. And then he says to Charlotte, do you remember when we did that? And she goes, oh, no, not really. And, oh my God, the amount of times I have had this with people where, and things that they've said to me too, where I remember speaking to a friend of mine from school. I mean, we weren't even really friends. We were just kind of people in the same year who were nice to each other. We had completely different friendship groups. And I got speaking to her recently, only briefly, and she messaged me, and she just said that I was one of the reasons that she didn't leave the school, because I was so nice to her one time when she was going through like a difficult period.
Right.
And I couldn't remember when or why or anything like that. And yet I'll remember an experience I had with her that she has forgotten about years ago. And this moment with BoJack where he says, oh, I imagined you living in Maine. And I mean, think back to the end of season 1 where BoJack has imagined his entire life go by him in Maine while he's on the drug trip in Downer Ending, and it turns out that it was all nothing. Like, Charlotte moved to Maine for like 30 days, went to New Mexico and had a totally different life, and then BoJack built an entire life with her in his head based on nothing.
People are weird, people are fucked, you know. I do that. You had that acquaintance, I guess it's to say, who's also done that and like built up things, but I guess we all do it. And I guess our kind of generation, I think we do it more because we don't talk face to face as much anymore. I mean, look at this, what we're doing, you know, we've never met properly. So people don't talk actually face to face, and they build up ideas around people. I remember when I was at uni, I moved into my halls of residence like weeks before anybody else did, but one of the guy was in my course, and he found me somehow, and he were into like all this kind of rap music that I were into at the time, and I said, oh yeah, well, we can meet up and we can go for a pint. And I was expecting this guy, due to how he was, you know, on like Messenger or whatever, to be all like, you know, I'm going to sound really old, but you know, like hip kind of way. And then I went to meet him and he was like really high pitched voice and really like not that at all. And it's just, why do we build people up like that, do you think?
I think it's something that we just, obviously, I think we see this in this episode where you just, it can't be helped. I think time spent away from people, you imagine them, you mythologize them essentially, and you build them up to be either something terrible or something special. And it's never gonna, the expectation is never gonna be met. And yeah, it's something that happens. And I always think, like a couple of years ago, I went through this phase where I split up with my girlfriend, and well, we split up. It makes it sound like I split up with her when I didn't. But and I went through this period of reconnecting with people who I'd not spoken to in years because I'd fallen out with them before me and my ex got together. And then when you're with somebody, you don't really need that connection to be, you know, it's kind of curious, like, oh, well, I wonder what would have happened if I hadn't fallen out with this person, or, you know, and then I made this effort to connect with like three or four people, and every single meeting was like a disappointment, or like every single conversation didn't go quite as I expected it to. Like, you rehearse things, you rehearse apologies, you explain why you were behaving a particular way on a particular day that you've thought about for 5 years, and they haven't given a second thought since it happened. And it's that kind of stuff that really makes, it's why I'm willing to forgive this episode more than I would otherwise, because the dramatic writing in this episode is not as prominent as I want it to be, but when it's there, it's so good, and it begins to get in touch with things in such a nuanced and detailed and really honest and accurate and precise way that the later seasons are so good at, that I think the stuff that happens around it, and we'll talk about the Toshive stuff because I know you want to talk about that. I'm not big on the Princess Carolyn just behaving like an agent again rather than a person, and I'm not big on the detective storyline stuff, but it's just sprinkled throughout all this really solid dramatic writing. And I said last week that even though the start of season 2 is not as good as I expected it to be, what it's backed up by is there's a more solid foundation now, and it means that when it has a weaker episode, there's still enough of these stronger elements that are more pronounced later supporting everything, and it just means that the overall episode is kind of dragged up in terms of quality. So I'm going to get my grade in early. We'll carry on talking about the episode, but I'm just going to give this a 7. It's just a flat 7.
Yep.
So I'm going to say, convince me that Toshive is the best part of this episode.
Other than all the herbs stuff and all the dramatic stuff, Toshive is the true and actual comic relief that this episode needs, because it's everything with BoJack and the Treasure Hunt, I think, is like absolutely bang average. I mean, I can't stand Sarah Lynn at all. I mean, I know what happens to her, but every time leading up to what happens, she is just, I mean, I know she's a mess and, you know, oh, she's troubled and all this, but I just can't, no, because I don't like, you know, in real life, I don't like people like that who've kind of like, you know, like made a mess of themselves. I'm not being controversial. Todd Chauvet, anyway, moving swiftly on. It's just, he's an idiot, isn't he? And I wrote in my notes, oh, here we go, he's dropped to £10 or whatever.
I was worried he was going to be chasing that $10.
I thought that. So that's what I thought was going to happen, which is probably why I've put so much acclaim on this, because I thought he'd be grabbing onto them birds and then they'd be going all. I seem to remember a bit where a balloon is going across, like a hot air balloon is going across the screen in an episode at some point. I might have made that up in my head, but I thought he was going to grab onto that and it'd be another twee, not very funny Todd story. But then he kind of goes into the stupidity of this whole new persona, because he is as stupid as he appears to be at this point, and completely lives it, and it's a complete change in personality that's needed, which I want to see brought back, because I don't like where he is now at the end of season 5. I mean, I don't know what anybody else thinks, but there was promise at the end of season four, and then they wasted that in season five, I think. But the fact that he's able to go all in and be this new persona is admirable. I mean, I don't know if he's aware that he's doing it, because but I wish I could do that, you know, now, and I'd be able to get away with
it. It's like he's in a trance a little bit.
Yeah, but it's nice. It's almost heartwarming, because everybody else is depressed or in it for money or in it for greed in this episode, or in it to get new clients. Mr. Peanut Butter's there just stirring the pot, but...
Why is Mr. Peanut Butter there?
He's just there to schmooze, isn't he, like he says? but Todd, or Toad, he lives this new life, and he's great, and his voice is more gravelly, and he's more confident, and then he sees BoJack at the end, and he just snaps right out of it, which...
And it's all BoJack's fault, yeah.
Again. So, I mean, he's just... It's a breath of fresh air that this episode needs, because if the comedy's not working and you just go on the drama, it's a bit of a dark, horrible watch. So yeah. I'm probably just clutching at straws, because I think the comedy in this episode, well, I think it is so
outside
weak. Outside of Toad, it's so weak. I mean, even inside, I mean, I don't know, if I went back and watched it again, would I find it annoying? I just think that it were nice to see Todd not be just an absolute buffoon screaming and shouting and no. I liked this new attitude. Yeah. Bring him back for season six.
One little thing I do want to note just before we finish up talking about this episode and we start talking about After the Party. It seems that Mr. Peanut Butter has a range of smart t-shirts. You know, the ironic shirt and tie t-shirts that they used to sell in like Primark and I presume in the States Walmart and Target,
yeah,
and stuff. I like that he has an array of those, because he wore one for his and Diane's wedding, and now he wears one for this party. Well, it's not really a party, it's more of a wake, but I like the fact that he has those t-shirts. They're a funny little, because it's just so Mr. Peanut Butter to wear one of those t-shirts non-ironically.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
I kind of love him for that. Like, it just makes him more adorable, even if he is a little bit irritating in this episode.
He can be. I mean, I think he's irritating in both of these at times. But the vocal delivery, like, you know, the voice acting when he's just stirring it up between all the guests and Princess Carolyn.
Yeah,
that's another highlight in an episode that's not got too many.
So what would you grade it? I've given it a 7.
Strong 6.
Cool. So after that is After the Party. And I don't know about you, but did this strike you while you were watching it as BoJack's first, like, high concept episode? Because we've had Downer Ending, but that was... That had a plot that kind of moved in a linear-ish fashion. Like, BoJack can't write... He wants to write the book again. He gets high. He has a very strange experience that leads him through a series of hallucinations that cause him to analyze himself. And then he goes to the writers' convention to ask if he's good or not. Whereas this is more three different perspectives of the same incident, and after the party, and we get right back into the characters who have been introduced at the start of season two, and the new dynamics, like Mr. Peanut Butter and Diana married, Wanda's back in this episode, BoJack and Wanda have moved in together, that sort of thing. I liked the character pairings in this episode. I didn't ever expect Todd and Princess Carolyn to fit so well together, but it seems that they do.
That works. I like to think that this episode is obviously, it is meant to go after episode two, but I think that they needed a buffer, and that's why they chucked in the previous episode, because I think if you had BoJack moving in with Wanda ending episode two, and then have this as the next episode, and you've already got BoJack having doubts, it makes him too, you know, he needs to be more sure of things, otherwise it's just, it's going to get annoying fast, that you can't commit.
You at least need the illusion of time between episodes, because I imagine they put all these episodes out on the same day, so if somebody binge-watches these and it's like, oh, let's move in together, and then no time passes. Oh, I think we've moved in together too quickly. Like, so I get what you mean, and I am now slightly more forgiving of Still Broken's point in the season, like where it's placed. I'm kind of more happy with that now.
So. Yeah, I mean, you needed something, and I suppose that I think this episode is a lot better. Obviously, it's not a throwaway episode, which I don't think they show as many anyway, but that the previous one definitely was, but this,
there's a lot of filler in this episode, I have to be honest.
Yeah.
I like the how, I mean, we'll do it in chronological order because the episode makes it really easy. So I really liked the beginning where they make it clear without even Diane saying, I mean, she does say in later in the episode, but they make it quite clear in the cold open that the party was not for Diane. It was Mr. Peanut Butter thinking it was for Diane, but he did it for himself, and you can kind of tell when he just leaves her at the door, wide-eyed and like, oh my God, why has he done this? And then Diane actually says at the end, you know, you think everybody wants what you want, but that's not how it goes. And then obviously they have the argument about Tony Curtis being dead, and then they split off into three storylines, and the first one of those is the Princess Carolyn and Todd storyline, which is okay. I think it's my least favourite of the three, because we spend a long time going round in circles. Like, I think if it was half the length that it was, their little segment together, I think I would like it a little bit more, but Todd sat in a car with two phones falling in love with each other for 3.5 minutes while Princess Carolyn doesn't see that Vincent Adultman is three people in a trench coat as opposed to just one person for another 3.5 minutes, and you realise that you've spent 7 to 10 minutes away from the people that we really want to be speaking about. And it, I mean, I liked the fact that they made it so obvious that Vincent Adultman was three kids in a trench coat, but also not obvious at the same time.
Yeah,
I kind of liked that, and I loved Todd's obvious one of my favourite Todd lines, which is the I love shimmying, which is just such a, it's one of those lines where I think when they write it in the script, it's one of those where it's just a silly throwaway gag, but now it's taken on a greater significance because he's had to climb out of windows later in the show.
Yeah.
And yeah, so I dig that, and it was just, I felt a little bit distracted because I was, after the cold open, I was in a position where I was like begging for Diane and Mr. Peanut Butter to really get into their relationship at this stage, and it just kept me waiting and waiting, and I was patient with the BoJack Wanda stuff because I thought that was pretty good, but the Princess Carolyn and Todd stuff, it's nice to have Princess Carolyn behaving like a person again and having feelings as opposed to just being an agent and treating it as a smooch fest as she did in the previous episode. But what they did with her here was essentially, it just went on a bit long. That was all. I think if the Princess Carolyn and Todd stuff had been 5 minutes or even 6 minutes instead of nearly 7-8 minutes, I think I would have been less frustrated with it.
I really didn't mind this bit at all. I thought, well, when I was making my notes, I put that this is the best bit of the episode, and it's not, but it's, I don't know, there's something about it. I'm interested to see Charlie Brooker like take the two mobile phones talking to each other and see what he does on the next season of Black Mirror there, I think. But no, there was something about the phones talking to each other. I mean, I've done it. I've asked, you know, when I've been like, you know, curious to see how far these like phones can get. And obviously like, it's been taken to the next level, and they are talking, and then the phones fall in love. But there's this really creepy music behind that's playing, and it's really foreboding, it's really worrying, because obviously it is weird, especially now that Alexas can talk and they can hear you and they can whisper. It's just it's just terrifying. And it's like, but I don't know, the fact that the least clever person, I'd say, on the on the entire show manages to make the phones, you know, fall in love. Did it get updated at all, do we know? Did that phone get updated and lose its love function?
I think so, and that's how it ends. Or he's about to do it, and then Princess Caroline gets back in the car.
Maybe it's all just one of his dreams that he might have. But I was curious when Princess Caroline said that Vincent has a temper. I mean, she follows it up. What is it? Well, it's not a proper temper, is it? It's a tantrum.
But he just throws a temper tantrum. Yeah. I think that's kind of a joke about him being a kid.
Yeah, because I was just like, what? Because obviously we aren't, or we are, I don't even know anymore. Are we meant to know that it is three kids and a thing? Because we've asked this before, and is it just one of the surreal jokes that's got out of hand and there is actually two people, but now they've actually, like, they've laid the cards out on the table?
Yeah, I think that's the balance it manages to maintain, actually, where you're still, like we have been every time he's turned up, we are convinced that it's three kids in a trench coat, but at the same time, it's incredibly plausible that it isn't.
Even after this and in...
Even after this.
Yeah. Because... But why would Vincent cover his head with a towel and the Berlin, but I don't even know, it's going to freak me out.
Yeah, exactly. I think that's kind of what it relies on. The only thing that made me a bit, not sad, but like it felt a little bit in this storyline like Vincent Adultman has kind of run his course as a character now. I feel like they've gotten as close to revealing that it's three kids in a trench coat as they could possibly get without actually committing to it. I feel like they've done the gag now, and I feel like any future appearances by him, I think there's a couple, isn't there?
I can't even remember.
Or is this it now? It'd Vincent be, Adultman.
It'd I feel be like best if it was.
In his course.
Yeah, I mean, definitely. Because, you know, where else are you going to go? Are you going to, like, reveal that it is an adult and a child? You know? But...
I'm going to look this up, actually. Vincent Adultman is a recurring character in Season 1 and Season 2 of BoJack Horseman.
That's got to be it.
According to BoJack, he's very obviously three kids stacked on a trench coat. His first appearance is Horse Majeure, and his last appearance is Higher Love. Oh, of course, he comes back, doesn't he, declare his love for Princess Carolyn at some stage, like, in a big public declaration.
And that already happened. That seems like it's already happened.
Yeah, sorry, that was when they got married, wasn't it? That was at the end of Season 1. Okay, so his last appearance is going to be in Episode 6.
So we'll see you next week.
Which is Higher Love. So yeah, in our next episode, we will see the last of him.
Higher Love, which... just in time for Valentine's Day as well. That's a weird. Romantic covers as always.
Yeah, so I'm kind of glad to see the back of him, and I think, you know, I think they were aware that they got so close to revealing the secret in this episode that they can't really go much further with it.
Yeah.
And he's clearly not what Princess Carolyn needs.
It worked well. Obviously, while it worked, but...
Yeah, bless her.
But, I mean, some of the lines that she comes out with afterwards, like when she's talking about her offer, they're really upsetting as well.
Which one stood out?
I can't remember if I wrote any of them down, which is a nightmare. But, No, I didn't. But just the whole how let down she got, and she was just going to give up. Now,
yeah,
I think she mentions giving up, which is it's just wild. Oh no, it makes her more sympathetic after the previous episode and her being just an agent again. It brings her back around to being a proper character again.
Yeah, I would agree.
Yeah, but love is does somebody say the words love is weird, or is that just me, you know, like rambling about something? Am I on a different, like, notepad here? No.
I wish I could remember.
I think somebody says love is weird. But it seems that this episode, Tony Curtis equals love. Everybody keeps mentioning Tony Curtis. Is he alive? Is he dead? And I think it's a metaphor for love, because when is it Diane or Princess Carolyn says Tony Curtis is dead, and it's obvious that the love's dead.
I get what you mean, actually, because as much as I feel, I mean, we'll get onto it, but I feel like Diane was being slightly unreasonable in her conversation with Mr. Peanut Butter, but I get the fact that Mr. Peanut Butter not trusting her enough to just believe her.
Yeah.
There's an element of, you know, clearly she believes that it symbolizes something bigger, and that it symbolizes trust, and it symbolizes how Mr. Peanut Butter feels about her, and obviously it gets into a whole thing there. Is there anything more you want to say about Princess Carolyn and Todd before we move on to BoJack and Wanda in the car?
I liked, but also didn't like. Well, I liked, it was funny. They just left Herb in the car. Herb's ashes in the car.
Yeah.
But, let's see the end. It's nice to see the potential end with Vincent, and I enjoyed the phones bit. I know, but yeah, I did. It was good, but it is the weakest of the three, looking back now.
Yeah. So next up is BoJack and Wanda. They leave the party and they're driving along, and Wanda tells this joke about a bag of mulch. And I like the animation, and I like the fact that it's a little kind of little tangent away from the main story, but it felt a little bit like they were just kind of marking time with a joke. And then obviously the way that their sort of little vignette comes to an end, I actually really appreciated, with the punchline being delivered right at the end after being made to wait for so long and not really thinking that it made sense. And I was a little bit unsatisfied. Like, BoJack was confused about Wanda's joke. I was a bit annoyed that they put it in there and had it take up so much time, because I'm just so eager to get into these characters that when they have the opportunity and then don't take it, I'm sat there thinking, why didn't you just do this? Why didn't you just have BoJack and Wanda have the conversation? But then they do get around to having the conversation about where their relationship is. And I think that's important.
Oh, it lines up with them two jokes, and then she just says, oh, some things take time.
Yes.
Yeah.
I have to say, wasn't with the plot line as it was going on, but when it ended, I was right there with it.
Well, yeah, because, well, that's what they say, though, isn't it? Some things take time, and it did seem like a drag, and there was a deer tangent for me.
Yeah,
where were that deer going?
That seemed a bit, well, to be honest, that overall that seemed a bit silly to me, but I really like how it was BoJack, without prompting, offered to pay for the deer's medical bills.
Yeah, he's got nice, kind of.
And I think that shows already the impact that Wanda is having on him.
Yeah.
Making him a slightly nicer person. And there's a moment beforehand where Wanda says to BoJack, is this what we're supposed to do? Are we just supposed to get in a fight now because another couple's had a fight? And she has this amazing ability. This is what I like the most about Wanda. I think this is where most of my favourite characters from TV shows come from, where if a show is built around a protagonist who is particularly violent or nasty or flawed or difficult, and you're thinking, BoJack Horseman, for example, or Walter White, or Tony Soprano, my favourite characters from the shows that they're in always tend to be the people who see right through them.
Yeah.
So my favourite characters so far from The Sopranos, I'm only midway through season 2 at the moment, because I'm starting a watch of that, but my favourite characters are like Dr. Melfi and Carmella.
Yep.
And even Livia, Tony's mother, like, they all have this ability to manipulate him and see through him and see him for what he really is, and then tell him and then give him that reflection of himself in order to try and make him change. And in Breaking Bad, you have Skyler, you have Mike was always my favourite,
yeah,
from Breaking Bad. And in BoJack Horseman, you have Wanda, you have Diane, you have Todd, but Wanda has this amazing ability to see right through even the minute details of BoJack at this stage of their relationship, and I think it's such a shame that they don't work out in the end, because she is perfect for him.
Yeah.
It's just that he's not perfect for her.
Yeah, I mean, I was thinking about Breaking Bad, and I was going to say that Walter doesn't have a wonder, but I was thinking about it in just a more like literal sense, that it probably was going to be Gretchen if they'd have showed that more. But I agree with Mike almost being like a wonder, because
just someone who has this ability to like second guess their next move.
Yeah, and see through all the all the garbage and stuff. Yeah, Mike. Skylar, until she gets into having all the money and stuff. Yeah. Some Breaking Bad spoilers there, but come on.
Yeah, if you're not caught up with that, then you know whose fault is that. But yeah, no, I liked the I did like the Wanda and BoJack stuff a fair bit. I was leaning a little bit towards thinking it was just okay when the joke hadn't quite come round, but then the Bag of Nuts turns up in the back of the car. BoJack says, "Huh, that is a pretty good punchline." Wanda says, "These things take time." And then it's almost as if they've turned to the audience and gone, "That's what it means. That's what the whole sketch meant." And I appreciated that.
Yeah, I'm tempted to try it on someone who's not seen the show before I show them it. But yeah,
try what?
Just try the old some things take timeline. Yeah, well, joke. Yeah, joke in inverted commas. Because but it was. Is it the best? I think it's the most well-rounded of the three, you know, almost couples arc, because you've got the comedic one in Princess Carolyn and Todd, and you've got the drama coming up, which is almost like a romance as well, between Peanut Butter and Diane, who I can't listen to properly anymore because I've been watching Community from the beginning again. it freaks me out. No, I think this, if it's not the best of the three, it's certainly the one that I enjoy the most now, because Diane does me head in at the moment.
I really like Diane and Mr. Peanut Butter one, to be honest, because it felt like where they should have started this episode. And I was so eager to get to her reaction to the party and, you know, that kind of stuff. And then we get it. And I've been waiting for a Mr. Peanut Butter and Diane rooftop chat, essentially.
Yeah.
Only this time they have it on a pool full of Jell-O. And I like the little visual gags that they kind of pepper into the conversation they're having, where they can't quite stand solid ground because of the jelly. But I really liked this conversation, because I don't think in the end you were supposed to sympathize with either of them. I think they both make valid points. I think they're both equally as wrong as they are right in this conversation, and I think the script handles it brilliantly. I think it finds a real balance where Diane is, I think she's perfectly in the right to be annoyed at the party, because as it's slowly revealed, Mr. Peanut Butter didn't throw that party for Diane. He kind of threw it so he could have a good time.
Yeah.
But at the same time, from Mr. Peanut Butter's perspective, he's put a lot of work into putting that party together, and Diane just goes, "Oh my God, this is, I can't believe you've done this. This is such a bad thing." And he must be thinking, people love surprises. Why are you so upset about this? Why are you so annoyed? And it's a conclusion that they both come to where, yeah, okay, maybe he was a bit overeager making the party such a big deal, but at the same time, she was also a bit unreasonable to ignore how much effort he'd put in. And then they have that lovely little moment at the end of the episode, which for me lifts the entire thing up, where she says, "God, I'm such a hypocrite. I want to go and jump around in that ball pit." And then he goes, "It doesn't make you a hypocrite. It just means that you've changed." And in the end, that's the lesson they've learned, where they're not, you know, she's not going to want to stay the same, and he's not going to want to change. And yeah, okay, in the end they break up, so, you know, it's sad that we can't have this conversation as the moment where things get better for them, because ultimately they don't. But I think that for this little moment, it's just nice to enjoy Diana, Mr. Peanut Butter, having a functional, happy relationship, considering that the rest of it is just the opposite of that.
Yeah. It is nice to watch him win a round as well, because after she's like screaming and going insane at him, and she says that she's not happy and stuff, and she feels like that's a massive weight lifted off her shoulders. You can see it when, you know, after she's actually said that she's not happy. But then again, he just keeps going and going and persevering and like winning her back round and stuff. And it's like, he must do something right, because he's putting all that effort in that everybody really should, but not necessarily to that level, but in different ways, in more nuanced ways. But when he tells her that all he does when she's out is just sit on the couch and wait for her, and then when he hears the car come up, he jumps up and down like an actual dog, that he's because that, you know, if he's wait, you know, without her, he's not human, is he? He's just a dog. He's just an animal who doesn't like, do anything.
I kind of love how, I think that might be my favorite, second favorite bit of the episode, behind Mr. Peanut Butter's last line. Because, which is the, it just means you've changed.
Yeah.
But this might be the second favourite bit of the episode, because how they managed to combine the routine of a dog's day into Mr. Peanut Butter's life and life away from Diane and with Diane, and make it quite poignant, and make it a joke, and make it a human-animal allegory, like, analogue, sorry, not allegory, but I am still blown away by how they managed to kind of make a joke about how a dog behaves when their owner comes back, but apply it to how a husband might behave when his wife comes back from being away somewhere. And they managed to, I mean, this is what makes Mr. Peanut Butter so great, because he is completely sincere. He is always surface level. There's never anything deeper or sinister to him. He's always kind, and he's, well, he's not always kind, but he's always, everything that you're seeing from him is all real, and there's nothing else below the surface. There's no ulterior motive, there's no games being played. He just is who he is, and he is what he is. And admitting this to Diane, where he's like, every time when you go out, I just kind of mope around and I don't really do anything, and I lie on the sofa, and then when I hear that car coming up the drive, it is the best part of my day. And I really love this bit, and I don't love it as much as It Just Means You've Changed at the end of the episode, which is, I think, is a great little cadence before Paul McCartney jumps out the cake. But I think each little vignette of this episode gets stronger as it goes on.
Yeah.
And I think that this is I am with you on this, where it's stronger than last week, than Still Broken by a little bit, to be honest.
Yeah, like, well, also a fair bit, I think. Because this is what we come and discuss and rewatch the show for. We don't watch it for the throwaway episodes where, you know, there's nothing that's going to impact the narrative properly in there, or have it take up, you know, half an episode or three quarters of an episode. This is what we want. It's all there, and it's all for a reason. You've got Princess Carolyn like moving on and becoming more depressed, but it humanizes her more to the audience, because we don't just want her to be the annoying stereotypical agent. We want her to see her like progress with her life, which is still an interesting watch. Yeah, and it's interesting to watch and heartbreaking to watch as it gets on. You've got Bojack again worrying about life and stuff, and like the bit where he's waiting in the hospital and he looks at the card that Charlotte gave him to give her a call, when he's got his girlfriend now, who's perfect frame right there. So Bojack's he's going to continue to be flawed. Diane, well, she's going to go away, but obviously, and I think their relationship just gets worse from here, doesn't it?
Yeah, this is why I was saying that it's a little bit of a shame that we have to only really view this moment with Diana, Mr. Peanut Butter in isolation, because, you know, you would hope that this would be the start of a more, but in the end, this is just a brief happy moment on its own in their otherwise very dysfunctional, you know, take that, our marriage, you know, it's not, it is a shame that it's not something that is an indicator of the future. In fact, it's the very opposite of that.
It's the beginning of the end, really. I mean, this is the peak for them, happiness-wise, I'd say. I can't think of anything later on, but I've just gone back and watched everything. So this is it until, well, there's not really love in season 5, where it's more lust there. So it's just, yeah, this is the peak of their marriage.
So what would you rate this episode?
I'd give it a light 8. I'm
the same.
I think if I watched it again without having to watch the episode before, and then if I maybe cut out episode 3 and watch episode 2 and episode and this episode back to back, it could be stronger. But there's some weak elements in there, but not many at all, really. I can't even think of any off the top of my head. Let me think. Maybe if you don't like the phones bit, or the Vincent and Kevin bits, and the old deer bit, that maybe knocks it off from being a top tier episode. But you know, you need padding, I think.
Yeah, I think you're right in describing it as padding, actually. One little thing I would like to mention about this episode that was something that maybe knocked it down slightly is that part of Mr. Peanut Butter's essentially museum to Diane party is that one of the rooms is a Starbucks, and a later season establishes that Mr. Peanut Butter and Diane first encounter each other in a Starbucks.
Yeah, but they
haven't. I thought, nice. But they never mention it.
No.
Which means that was something that they added in later, and it just kind of ruined the continuity for me a little bit. And otherwise, I wouldn't expect it of any other show, but this show really seems to care about that stuff, so.
Yeah, that's something. But I think we can allow them, like, one thing, maybe.
Oh, yeah.
Why not?
So, next week, we have season 2, episode 5, which is Chickens.
Oh.
BoJack Horseman really wants his director, Kelsey, to like him. Todd, Diane, and Kelsey's daughter help a chicken who's on the run from the police. And we'll also be covering season 2, episode 6, which is Higher Love. Princess Carolyn sees an opportunity when Mr. Peanut Butter's agent dies. BoJack flips when he says the L word out loud to Wanda. I am looking forward to Higher Love more than I am Chickens.
Oh, definitely.
I will put it that way.
Definitely, definitely. I cannot stand Chickens. I don't even know why, but I'll probably end up loving it now. I'll watch it and, yeah, it'll be like a 10 out of 10. But
brand new eyes.
Oh, yeah, we need them. Well, I need them. Right.
Okay, so this has been another episode of Reaccess Hollywood. I have been a Rob Wilson type for the past 50 minutes or so.
I've been a Samuel Cook type. Let's see how long that lasts.
Well, let's see. Hopefully at least until the end of this episode, otherwise that's going to be a hell of an editing job for me. We will see you next time. Yeah, we'll just see you next time.
Indeed.
Cool. I really like keeping these under an